the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And welcome back to the program. Good to have everybody with us, just wending our way through the week, the month, and the year. It's time for another hour of, I will call this stellar programming, and I mean that, as we get things going. Bucket Strategy Investing Show, imparting to you the best in money strategies and money information right here. Professor Rick Plum here with me again. I'm Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. Rick is our brain trust advisor, as he has been for these many years. More topics to cover this hour, along with your emails. Got a lot of emails to get to, so we're going to start with those and your phone calls. But we got every line open right now. So if you got a money question of any kind, you can take part in the discussion. You call us. 877-PLANNER. Lines open right now, 877-752-6637. If you want to add to the stack of emails that we'll be reading on the show this hour, you go over to wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page, and we will read it here on the air. Works very simply. Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner. He returns for this hour courtesy of the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group. They sponsored this hour of the program. We thank them very much. We do try on the show to deliver to you the best in strategies, the money strategies that can help you to get through retirement. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air, including Professor Plum, call him or anyone nationwide at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Your situation is unique to you, so you need to find out if your individual retirement goals, your needs are being met. How do you know? You may not until you talk to them. Access to a network of brain trust advisors all across the country. The Lucia Capital Group folks will help you out. Again, 800-644-1150. On the air, our number, 877-PLANNER. I mentioned we have plenty of lines open right now, so if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. I do want to get to a few emails here before they really start to stack up. This one is from Ned in Ryerson, New York, or somewhere. I just got a new job making $55,000 a year with an average yearly bonus of 10%. I'm 23. I'm doing the 401k up to the match, but what else can I do to earn the most? I'll be living at home for the next couple of years. I want to take advantage of the opportunity while I can. Hey, good for you, Ned.
Well, with $60,000 of annual income, you're in the 15% bracket. You're in the 15% bracket by quite a bit. And depending on how much you're putting into the 401k, you're probably going to stay in the 25% income tax bracket. But because you're living at home at least for the next several years, and you may want to be buying a home in the not, you know, at some point.
He said
in the future,
a couple of years. I don't know. Maybe that means, you know.
I would, given your age, I would do a Roth IRA. You're still eligible to do a Roth IRA, and just keep putting away as much. There's a couple things. Do your Roth IRA every year, $5,500 there. Make sure you're putting enough in the 401k. And if they have a Roth 401k, I wouldn't even mind doing that because it can open up some opportunities down the line. But get some money into the 401k, whether Roth or otherwise. Make sure you're getting the matching contribution. And then I would do something that some people may or may not like, but I would look at areas that I might like to live. And I would look at what it might cost me on a monthly basis to buy a house, buy a condo, townhouse, whatever it is you're going to do. And although you may or may not be paying rent at home, start paying a payment equal to what you're going to be paying in the future for rent or to buy a place, and build that discipline of writing a check, making a transfer on the first of every month for the amount of your rent or upcoming payment, and get used to making that payment. Take it out of your budget before you've even seen it. It'll do two things. It'll build that discipline that's going to be required to move out, and it'll build up a nest egg to give you some ability to move out while you have all this extra money. Take it away from your budget in a positive fashion before it gets into the checking account and becomes part of the beer budget. So let's start building savings discipline now. Definitely do the Roth IRA, $5,500. Do at least enough into the 401k to get the match and maybe even a little bit more. And also, you're making pretty good money. Start saving for that house by making a house payment, mortgage payment, whatever, however you want to look at it. If the rents in the area are $1,500 a month, start paying rent. Now, if mom and dad are charging you $300, $500, make up the difference into your own savings. You know, get yourself used to making that bigger payment so that it's all, when you do move out, that's the biggest adjustment. It's like, wow, I was paying $300-$400 a month at home, and now I got to pay $1,500 a month. That's a big adjustment. Adjust to it now while if anything happens, you can always get the money back. So start building your disciplines now. Do the Roth IRA, do the 401k.
Good advice. Good advice, Ned. I hope that helps you out. We appreciate that. 877-PLANNER, our number. We'll take a couple of calls. 877-752-6637. Still one line open right now. Let's move to Morris up next in Thousand Oaks, California, I do believe. Hello, Morris. How can we help you today?
Hi. How are you doing today?
Very well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm not doing too good, I don't think. I don't know. You might have a solution.
Okay.
I'm 74, retired. I do have some savings. I'm not dirt poor or anything. I do have a house paid off. And I was trying to maybe do a little traveling or something, was looking into a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
But is there any other thing, and I've investigated these reverse mortgages for a couple of years, and I kind of don't like the way the situation's set up. Because if you take your line of credit out and leave your money in there, they will pay you like 4% or something a year. However, if I borrow, let's say, assume that I accumulate another $50,000 on my line of credit because I left the money in there, if I take that money out, they're going to charge me interest on it.
Right, because they're basically loaning it to you then.
Right, but let's just let that go for a minute. I will have a more borrowing power, but is there anything I can do besides this line of credit to get my money out of this house?
Well, there's some new issues out where you're basically selling the future appreciation of the house for an amount today. So you may be able to get paid today for the appreciation or for splitting the appreciation on the house later on. It won't be anywhere near as much as a reverse mortgage will pay you. And you're not giving up, you're not creating an accruing debt that could balloon a little bit, but you are giving up 50 to 75% of the future appreciation of the house. And so, you know, there's some things that are in that area. But the reverse mortgage, you know, you said you have a little bit of savings left, but if you're down to basically a comfort level where you don't want to go any lower than what you have in savings, the reverse mortgage is probably going to be one of your better bets. And so whether you do it the equity line or they give you the lump sum, it's all about what happens when you're gone, and do you care that the people below you in the next generation or your heirs get a huge debt-free house, or they have to pay off a mortgage when you go? Yeah, it's more of who do you want to have the money more, you or the heirs?
Yeah, well, that's no problem there. It's just the fact that at 74, here a few years back, maybe 10 years before this, I looked into a reverse mortgage, and they were paying at that time like 65% of the appraisal. Now
right.
They're clear down to 62% of the appraisal. And on top of that, if you happen to have missed, which I have, not for financial reasons, I just maybe neglected paying my taxes on time by a week or two. Now they want to withhold another $20,000 or $25,000 of that line of credit. I don't get charged interest for it, but that's just to make sure that I pay my taxes, which I've always paid them.
Right, just
I've never
a little bit
really
late
been
ones.
That delinquent, but now they want to tap me for another $25,000.
Right, they've tightened up the reverse mortgage rules over the past several years. They have to make sure that you can actually make the tax payments and maintain the house, because for a while people were just giving these huge reverse mortgages, but the people that were living in the house stopped paying anything else, and so they were having problems on the other end with having all this. Not only was there a huge debt on the house, but there were all these
repairs,
back taxes that needed to be paid, and the house was in disrepair, and it was really not fair to the reverse mortgage lender that you basically trashed the house. So, I mean, they've tried to tighten it up. It is what it is because you missed the deadlines, but as I said, you can either look into one of these areas where you sell the future appreciation. I haven't looked into them. I have not done the due diligence on them. I've just read about them online in different places, or the reverse mortgage. Those are the only ways you're getting money out of the house without selling it.
Yeah, I looked into that just a little tiny bit, but I wasn't interested at all.
Okay.
My house will appraise for approximately, well, I already got an appraisal on it, for about $350. And I was going to go ahead with this reverse mortgage, and last minute they come back and said, well, we're going to withhold $25,000 of that for taxes and insurance. And I've never been late on my insurance payment. But anyway, this other deal, they only wanted to give me like $50,000 or something.
I know. The amount's a lot smaller.
Yeah, I'm not interested in it. No.
Okay. Well, those are your choices.
Yeah, those are your choices. It's unfortunate. I'm a little surprised. Thanks, Morris, for the call. I appreciate it. I'm a little surprised that they would. I hadn't heard of that happening, but apparently it is.
Well, that's just they're almost underwriting it, and they're making sure that you have enough income from other sources to make it work.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, hang on. We have another question similar, I believe. John in Allentown, PA. Hold on a second. Got to take a break, so we'll get to your question next. Still two lines open right now, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, The Brain Trust, standing by from Lucia Capital Group, answering your questions when we come back. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Talking to you about your money here on the radio and television sets. If you have questions, we do have lines open right now, 877-752-6637. I want to remind you, too, that there's another chance to meet the Brain Trust. In fact, if you've never seen the Brain Trust in person, and I'm talking about Professor Rick Plum, Terry Keyes, and some of the local advisors, you can do so over the next several weeks, depending on, you know, when you're listening to this. But if you want to catch the Brain Trust in February, a couple of locations, February 20th, Saturday morning in Las Vegas, Nevada. A couple of weeks away, so you can join us in Las Vegas on Saturday, February 20th. You go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. It's all free. You just sign up. Tell us you're going to be there in Las Vegas on the 20th. Seattle, Washington on the 27th, and Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday, March 12th. That means Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix are the next three. There will be more locations after that. If you want to know right now where you can meet the Brain Trust, sign up and get your questions answered. You go to WealthEd, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com, and sign up there. As I said, they're all free. And the main thing is you get to learn about retirement income strategies. This is for 2016. Every year is different. Maybe you've been to one in the previous years and you need an update. This is what they're going to be doing, talking to you about that in Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, Arizona. Once again, WealthEd.com. And speaking of WealthEd.com, you can join us on the email list. You go to the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. As I said, I do want to get to a few more of these emails. Let's get to one from Ned, who's got a question in Ryerson, Arizona. I have a 90-10 stock bond allocation. Okay, so 90% stocks, 10% bonds. Which is down about 9% the past couple of months.
That's about right.
In fact, I'm surprised it's only 9%. Ned says, I'm not going to panic, but I'm wondering what the best move is now. Do I put more into the account? Do I reallocate the stock bond mix? Do I take money out or do I do nothing? Another young person. He says, I'm 29. I'm in the 25% tax bracket. Also, is this a good time to do tax loss harvesting?
You could do some tax loss harvesting. I'm not sure what, it's not at the end of the year. Usually we're doing that at the end of the year to offset gains. Just if you've got a lot of losses and you don't think you'll have any gains for the year, then doing some loss harvesting to offset against other income can help if you're in a 25% income tax bracket or higher. So, I mean, it is something to think about, but it's nothing imperative that you do right now. You're 20-something years old.
29, yeah.
My question isn't why you're 90-10, it's why you're not 100% stocks, why you're not down 10 or 12%. You know, this is obviously, or I shouldn't say obviously, by the way you're investing it, it is long-term money. It is not money that you're going to use for the down payment of a house in a couple of weeks. It is not money that you're going to use for an emergency fund. This is money you're looking 10 plus years into the future or more. So being down, you're going to be down 10 plus percent on your long-term growth portfolio many times over the next 40 years between now and when you ultimately retire. It is not a time to panic. It is a time, yes, continue to add to it. continue to dollar cost average, continue to save and invest for the long haul. Now, I am not saying it's at the bottom that we're going to turn around right now, but it's at a better time to buy than a year ago, better time to buy than a month ago, better time to buy than a quarter ago. Will it be the better time today than a quarter from now? I don't know. But what I'm saying is buy now, assuming this is long-term investment money, buy now, buy again next month, buy again the following month, buy every month. Continue to buy into that volatility and grow this portfolio over time. As John was mentioning earlier, we've had 8 bear markets of a downturn of 20% or more over the past 50 years. You're going to see bear markets, and those are just great buying opportunities. Is this the bottom? Oh, probably not. We could go further down on than this. Maybe today, maybe tomorrow even. Just keep buying. It's like voting in Chicago. Buy early, buy often. Just keep doing it.
Now, you're saying this to Ned because
he's 20-something years old.
He's 29 years old. Now, I should ask you this. If Ned were, 60, would your advice be the same, similar, or would you suggest perhaps doing something else? And again, I don't mean
if Ned were 60.
He wouldn't be 90-10 stock.
And he's saying that his long-term growth component is 90-10. I'd be telling exactly the same thing. If his entire portfolio was 90-10, I'd want to know a little bit more about him and say, well, when you ultimately retire, or are you already retired, where is your income going to come from? If you are so blessed as to have a pension and Social Security that is greater than your needs are ever expected to be, you can afford to be that aggressive. And by definition, this could be very long-term money. If on the other side, you say you're going to need to start withdrawing or are withdrawing money from this portfolio, either now or in the near future, then you need, forget the fact that we're down or up, it wouldn't matter. You need to make your portfolio less aggressive. You need to start creating a strategy to be able to take the money out of the portfolio. And a portfolio that's down 9% over a month is not a good portfolio to start taking an income from. So let's create the strategy to make sure what you have suits what you're trying to accomplish. But if he was talking purely about his long-term growth portfolio, the answer is the same. Either hold on because it's a 10-15-year investment, or add to it because it's a 10-15-year investment. But that's only assuming that's a 10-year, 15-year investment or more.
Now, you see, this goes against some of the conventional wisdom that we hear. You said if this were his long-term, and if he were 60 years old, he's 29, but if he were 60, and you said this were his long-term growth component of his portfolio, you would still say the same thing. Keep buying, and you're talking about, say, an equity-type portfolio,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, yes, very much so.
Yeah. Well, for somebody who would say, but when you're 60, you should only be maybe 30, 40% stocks.
Well, that may
Why
be
would
true.
You keep buying?
But that may be true on the overall portfolio, but we weren't talking about his overall portfolio. We were talking about the money that he doesn't need to touch for 15 years, and that's one portion of the portfolio. And that's why I said if he doesn't need to touch it for 15 years because he has plenty of other income from other sources, he can be long-term minded with this money. But if he needs the money in the near future, then that is the wrong portfolio and he needs to reallocate. And as I mentioned, it doesn't matter whether he's down or up. He may be down 9% now, but it could be a lot worse in the not too distant future. So reallocating at least some of the money now into a safer position so you can draw some money out of it makes a lot of sense. Stop the bleeding before it turns into a hemorrhage. Let's take a look at, can you even still afford to retire after a loss? And we saw this in 2009, 2010. People were 90-10%, 90 stock, 10% bonds in 2007, and they wanted to retire in 2010, and they didn't pull back the aggressiveness, and they thought they had enough money to retire. They just needed a little bit more juice out of it, so they kept going for it. And then 2008 happened, and their portfolio dropped 30%. Well, if they were almost there in 2007, they weren't anywhere close to it in 2009 after the market dropped 30%. So they couldn't retire, assuming they kept their job, they couldn't retire in 2010 like they wanted to. And that is a problem when you turn the control over your decision-making time horizon from yourself to the market. It may not be looking out for your best interest. So do it. Take control of it so it is looking out for your best interest.
Well, and you have to be looking out for your best interest. The market couldn't care less if you're retiring tomorrow, next week, or 10 years. Does it? No. It'll do what it's going to do. 877-PLANNER, our number. Some lines open. Call now with your money questions, some more emails, and investor behavior. We're going to be talking about all this when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, standing by to help you out right here on the radio, television, and internet, and everywhere else you happen to be watching or tuning in. Doesn't matter. 877-752-6637. Lines open right now, so if you have a money question, give us a call. Emails, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. And we were mentioning a little bit ago, Professor Plum, or you were talking about, people... in essence, trying to time when is a good time to get in, when is a good time to get out, and you can't do that.
One of the most common questions is, now a good time to invest? Well, how long of a time horizon do you have? If you've got a 1 or 2 year time horizon, probably not, but I can't say for sure.
Well, so why is it when I read all this stuff and I hear this on radio programs for whatever reason, I hear you can. You know, this is a good time. I'm looking at the charts right now, and I'm seeing that the sticks are pointing left, and the leaves are blowing right, and here's a great time.
If you make your living telling people how to understand which way the leaves are blowing and take that and equate it to an investment to help them make money, then you're going to tell them you know how to make it work.
Yes.
Does it mean that you can? If you really could, do you really think you'd be selling your system? I wouldn't. If I actually had a system that could tell me when to buy and sell, that would be the most closely guarded secret in the world.
Well, of course. Because what if there was a machine that just appeared out of the sky and it told everybody it was 100% right in the direction of stocks? Everybody would listen to it, and then
it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work anymore.
I mean, but I am not, if I had that system, but if I am selling something, I'm going to make you believe that what I'm selling you is the best thing for you. But making money is not what I'm selling.
No, and one of the reasons I think that these people who do this stuff seem to be successful at selling this idea that you can time the market.
We want to believe we can do it.
Because people want to believe that there's a simple solution. And people like to look for patterns. And they say, well, gee, this really does fit that pattern. And so, yeah, now's a good time. I'm going to hedge my bet. Occasionally you get lucky. Most of the time you don't. Certainly you're not going to do it over a long period of time. Dalbar did that study, the quantitative analysis of investor behavior. I like to get this out every so often. It's a long thing, but you can boil it down into a bunch of different points. And investor returns compared to the benchmark. Have you seen this, Professor?
Oh, yes.
Investor returns compared to the benchmark.
And it's very telling.
It is. Now, I don't have all the exact numbers here because it was too many to do. But as I recall, the benchmark beat the average investor by something like 5 or 6 percentage points.
Well, and it goes back to, the average mutual fund does X over a given period of time, usually a longer period of time, 5 to 10, 15 years. And the average investors in those same mutual funds did significantly less than X. Well, why? Because we're human and we do things at the wrong time for the wrong reasons. We get out because we're afraid that the market just crashed and it'll never come back. We wait until it's on a tear to get back in, so we miss the big part of the run-up. Then we finally get back in. We buy in at the wrong time. We sell out at the wrong time.
Yes. It's done a lot. And some of the things that they came up with regard to us, we're the individual investors, okay? You and me and everybody else. They found that investors are unskilled. And by unskilled, they mean unskilled at investing. They engage in something called portfolio peaking. You know what that is? Yes, you do.
Always looking at your portfolio, see how it's doing. Ooh, I'm up 30 cents a share today. It's a good day. And you make your life living around that, whether you're happy or not. Or more recently, I'm down today.
I'm selling everything out. Exactly. So portfolio peaking. They found that investors, by and large, they have no actual plan. They tend to go in and just, especially we're talking about people who go and trade day to day.
Well, I see people going in and they buy a stock with no end game in mind. They buy a stock because, and there's a couple stocks that I've bought over time, and I bought them with no end game in mind. But by the way I'm doing it, I don't have an end game. I wanted to own that stock for the next 30 years. Ferrari.
He didn't say that. I'm just gonna say that is not a recommendation.
No.
But they go in. They have absolutely no plan with what they do. They just like it, or they see that their friends made a lot of money.
But if you're an investor and you're not emotional about the stock, like I happen to be about some stocks, I really just want to own them. You need to have one of two things in mind: either a time frame that you're going to own it, you're not going to look at it, or a value where once it hits that value, high and low, it's you're done, you're out. You know, I buy it for 10. If it hits 15, I'm out. If it hits 11 or 9, I'm out. So have a strategy going in, a buy sell discipline going in, so that you and stay with it. Unfortunately, a lot of people say, yeah, I'm going to buy it at 10, and I think it's over the next couple of years it's going to go to 15. And then when it gets to 14, you're thinking, you reassess everything and say, I'm going to go even higher. What the heck? I'm going to take off my whole game plan and start over. That now you're just kind of floating in the wind again.
That's exactly what you're doing. There's more that came up out of these. I want to get to another email or two, but suffice to say that what Dalbar found, this is an extensive study that was done over quite a long period of time. They found that just the average investor doesn't have a clue. All right? And I include us. I include everybody who's...
When it comes to investing, I'm an average investor.
Of course.
I don't know anything more than the average person out there, really, on what to pick, when to pick it, or how to pick it.
No, you can't. You can't possibly do that. So all you can do is have a strategy.
Strategically, I know that if I am buying a stock, I need to have a 5, 10, 15, 20-year time horizon for it.
Yep, you tend to be a whole lot more successful. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Emails, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. This is from Ned in, looks like, Ryerson, Virginia. How do you know when to turn on the guaranteed minimum income benefit on an annuity? I'm 62. I'm retired. I purchased 3 of these, and 2 of them have spousal continuation riders, and 1 does not. The one that does not pays out at 5% if I turn on the income benefit, which won't increase no matter how long I delay turning it on. I'd like to turn on the income rider and start with income with the goal of getting more money out of the annuity than what it is worth. How do I know if this is a good idea or not? Explain what Ned's trying to do here.
Well, he's trying to make sense out of what he's bought. He has 3 guaranteed minimum income benefit rider annuities. And so when do you turn them on? Well, it depends. There's kind of a sweet spot. Now, this one that he has that's a single life only says that they will give him an income based on 5% of his income base for the rest of his life, and that 5% isn't banded, meaning it's not going to go up the older he gets. So if he waits until 70, he's still only going to get 5% of the income base. And at this point, at 62, he's going to get 5% of the income base. Well, in that respect, I'd say turn on that one now, because it doesn't seem to get any better as you go older. So turn it on. The only thing that's happening is if it grows, you'll get a little bit better income. But why wait for that one? The other ones that are joint lives, and also this one will go away potentially when he passes away. And so I would turn that one on first and then wait a little while for the other two. Now, the other two are going to have a sweet spot. It may only pay 4.5%, 4% right now at 62, and it may pay 5% at 65. And 6% at 6 or at 70, and it may scale up, and many of them do that. But there's still an appropriate time horizon. Usually between 65 and 70 is the sweet spot for turning them on. Now, the insurance companies will make it look like the longer you wait, the better off you are. The reality is, the longer you wait, the better off the insurance company is.
Well, you get a higher payout, don't you?
But you get it for a shorter period of time, because you're not going to live forever.
Because you got a year gone is what you have, or 2 or 5 or
whatever.
However
many.
Yeah.
And so they have increased the payout a little bit, but not enough to really make up for that risk. They're, from the 60 to 65, generally the increases make some sense. From 65 to 70, they may or may not. But once you get past 70, you're starting to run into a period of time where the longevity, to have a guaranteed minimum income benefit rider on an annuity, makes sense. You got to have some longevity. So that joint life, I think, makes a lot of sense, because now it's based on 2 lives, not just 1. But you got to turn it on so that you can actually use some of that benefit. And if you don't need the guaranteed income, whether emotionally or financially, you don't need that income, I'm not sure that there's a reason to keep these policies, depending upon how disparate the income base is from the cash value. But I would say, first off, do you need the income right now? Will the income go up on a certain predetermined basis? Is there a roll-up, meaning does the income base go up if you don't take it out? He didn't mention that. He said it's 5% fixed, and so I don't know whether he gets any benefit for waiting. But if there's no benefit for waiting, don't wait. Take it now. Get the use out of the policy. The joint lasts because we do need to leave something for your spouse. Hopefully they do increase as time goes on, and maybe turning them on in 3 to 7, 8 years would be the best bet for those two.
Now, I mean, what's your opinion overall of these? I mean, he's 62. This is obviously some kind of variable annuity.
Or an index annuity.
Either one.
Yeah, could be either way. They come on different chassis, meaning the underlying cash value is going to grow based on a variable annuity chassis, which has sub-accounts.
Oh, so this could be either one.
Or an index annuity, which is an interest-bearing account. So either one there. What are my feelings for him? I think that if you do not have enough direct pensionized income to meet your day-to-day living expenses, they can make sense. If you've got more pensions and Social Security than you know what to do with, these are horrible investments. It's all about what you need in your life.
It's all about your goals. That's why every individual situation is different. Okay, we got more coming up. We got some trivia. We have some emails and your phone calls still ahead. 877-PLANNER, our number. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
I know.
They say our love won't pay the rent, for it's earned, our money's all been spent.
Welcome to the program, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Talking to you about your money, and et cetera, et cetera. We do have a couple of lines open. We only got a few more minutes, though. So let's get back to the phone lines. We'll get to some trivia shortly and another email or two should we have time. But Oliver is up next. Hello, Oliver. How can we help you today? Oh, now you see. Now there you go. Okay, close enough. I wondered.
Well, that's what happens.
Some people don't want to hang on. Okay, well, let's get to the trivia then. Let's see. Today's trivia.
Get the right sheet, John.
No, I have it. Today's trivia, this came from Bankrate. Less than, it should be fewer than, but that's okay. Fewer than 1 in 4 American households, that's 23%, have a 6-month rainy day fund available in the event of a financial emergency. So fewer than 1 in 4 American households, 23%, have a 6-month rainy day fund available in the event of a financial emergency. Okay, we've said this before.
I don't know anybody that has a 6-month fund. A rainy day fund.
They're talking about all your monthly expenses.
I know some retirees that have a 4 or 5 year rainy fund. And if you have a bucket strategy for retirement, you have a rainy day fund because you have all your expenses met for the next umpteen years. But for the average investor, you know, average person that's working, you know, especially middle age, a 6-month rainy day fund over and above whatever you have in your investment portfolio, just sitting in cash. I don't know that many people that have that, and I'll bet it's less than 1 in 4.
Yeah, and this goes back to the old adage that you should have money sitting in a
emergency fund.
Cash or, right, but I think generally what they were talking about, this goes way back to what my grandparents used to tell me was.
And, you know, employment wasn't maybe as secure. I mean,
yeah.
Credit was definitely nowhere near as available. I guess it depends on what we define as 6 months rainy day access. A lot of people look at the availability of credit, that I have a credit card that's, you know, I could hit up if I have to. Now, it's hard to pay your rent on a credit card.
Yes.
But the combination of, you know, being able to have these different things for 6 months, you could have 6-month funds. I just don't know people that, you know, somebody that makes $100,000 a year, I don't see a lot of them having $50,000 in cash. Or spends that much money, you know. I just don't see that many people with that much in cash. And to be honest, we're not being paid to have money in cash right now. It doesn't make sense to keep that much money in cash.
No, you could, Professor Plum. Tell me if I'm wrong. You could use your home equity line of credit. Don't tap into it, but have that as a possible source of emergency cash if you need it.
Right.
You could have maybe a credit card or two. Just keep it open.
So maybe you have 2 months worth of cash and then accessibility of other funds down the line. I just don't know that many people that keep that much in cash. Now, I do know some retirees who keep that much in cash because it helps them sleep at night. But most people, especially workers, rarely do they have 6 months that they just call their rainy day fund.
Absolutely.
Now, if you have it, God bless you. I mean, it's, you know, not the worst thing in the world to have. You're not earning much on it, but you're also sleeping very well at night. And in many respects, it's that sleep at night factor that is more important than how much I did or did not earn on my rainy day fund last year.
Yeah, in fact, that you could have all the great reasons to do something financially. The numbers all work out. Everything works out perfectly. But if it's making you pace back and forth and you're getting heart palpitations and because you're not doing it the way you want to do it, then that's what should take over,
right.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what the numbers say, if you are uncomfortable doing it, and you lose sleep, you're anxious, whatever the case may be, it's probably not the right thing for you to do. Yeah. Not that always just doing what makes you perfectly comfortable is always right, but there are things that where the emotional side of it's going to override. The problem with investing and being nervous, you tend to pull out of the market, the investment, whatever it is, when it goes down. And that's the wrong time to pull out of it. And so the nervous Nelly is difficult in the fact that they tend to be looking for the exit when they shouldn't be. You know,
yeah, and that goes back once again to investor behavior. I'll bring up some more of this tomorrow or sometime in the next day or two because this speaks right into what we were talking about, that Dalbar study a couple of segments ago. Want to get to one more email before the top of the hour. If you want to email us, it's wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheds.com. Ned in Ryerson, California, my teacher's pension will put me into the windfall penalty for Social Security and will reduce my benefit by about $300 a month.
Okay.
If I file it and suspend my benefits at age 66 and 4 months, he says that's my full retirement age, can my wife, when she turns 67, which is her full retirement age, take a spousal benefit at the non-reduced rate since she has no pension?
Did he say how old he is right now?
Well, his full retirement age is 66 and 4 months.
Well, so if your full retirement age is 66 and 4 months, you can't file and suspend and have somebody else take a benefit from you. To be able to have the file and suspend option, you'd have to do it by April, the end of April this year. And that means your full retirement age is 66. So if your full retirement age is 66 and 4 months, you don't have the file and suspend option and then allow somebody else to pull a benefit from you.
He must be born in 57 if your retirement age is 66 and 4 months?
Sure.
Okay, whatever it is.
Now, your wife's full retirement age is 67, which means that she is not 62 right now. And she did not turn 62 before the end of 2015, which means that she cannot take a spousal benefit from you without applying for her own. So, several things going on. Now, as far as the windfall elimination provision, regardless of when you apply for it, if you are already receiving your California State Teacher Retirement Pension, it will reduce your Social Security benefit. And because your Social Security benefit is being reduced, any spousal benefit that's being pulled from your work record will also be reduced. Now, your widow's benefit won't be reduced. If you die, your wife will go back to the original formula to look for a widow's benefit. She won't have the windfall elimination provision on the widow's benefit like you do on your own and or the spousal retirement benefit. So we'd have to look at all the numbers and all the different ages to see what may or may not work for you and how and when to take your benefits.
Now, he's been affected by the change in law that happened at the end of 2015.
Right. He no longer has the file and suspend option allowing somebody else to take a benefit from him. He no longer has, neither one of them have the spousal, the restricted application availability.
Yeah, just again because he wasn't clever enough to have been born before 1953.
Well, on the file and suspend, it would have been 66 right now.
Yeah, he would have had to be age 66 at this point. So anyway, there's your answer, Ned. Hey, we appreciate it. If you're on hold, hang on. We'll have Professor Plum work overtime and talk to you off the air. And by the way, if you want to talk Professor Plum off the air, you can reach him at the number at Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number. In fact, any of the advisors will talk to you about your retirement strategy, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Talk to them about your bucket strategy. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.